Solicitor General says that there is a significant uncertainty with regard to the demolition costs of Pretoria. Of course, the reason for that is that we have not demolished. That is quite very standard, that, because if you haven't demolished, you have to account and disclose it as a significant uncertainty. So that has been done. But with regard to that position, you would recall a few months ago we were here and we said to this committee that we're looking at actually building on that land, and we're looking at a BOT kind of a project or PPP kind of a project. We are in talk with Treasury. You also recall that Treasury was assisting us to do what we call feasibility studies in terms of us building. That process is still not finalized, unfortunately, because they were doing it for us. We keep engaging them, Chairperson, but I must say that at the moment, that Acadia is not our priority in terms of addressing it. The priority at Acadia currently is to remove the satellite office from there, because that structure that we have there is a structure that was not supposed to be permanent. You would recall that when we relocated to Centurion, we were actually supposed to be there for about 4 months. Now, what happened since then is that we have done, I think, if I were to be correct, 3 advertisements with regard to premises to relocate the office. The first one, there was no response. The second one, the response was quite insufficient. The third one, there was a response. The process went through just when we signed the appointment letter. The service provider tells us, your procurement process took long. I already got rid of the building last week. And he offers other 2 buildings for us to look at. Unfortunately, we then said to him, we're going to get first the advice of Treasury. And Treasury said, no, start the process from scratch. Now, that is a challenge, Chairperson. I think the issue of buildings is quite a challenge. I don't know what we're going to do about it. The procurement process takes long. We started it again. We're almost towards the end now. We're sort of trying to fast track it because we need to remove that office from there because the structure is not permanent. Then we can then start prioritizing to deal with the Acadia building itself. So I think that's where we are in terms of that.
Thank you, Mr. Joachim. Ms. Scott-Barnard.
Thank you. If you can just fill me in. You're advertising with a view to buying. No. Why are you not working through, why is Public Works not sourcing a building that suits you? Yes, you smile. Don't worry, I know Public Works quite well now. So Public Works are not assisting in this. Are they completely cut out of this process, which I find very odd? But anyway, so you're left on your own, but you're still having to... I thought there was some legal advice not to continue paying the rentals for the building where your satellite office is. Financially, is it still, I think it was $300,000 a month or something back in the day. Are you paying or not for this bizarre building and situation you've found yourselves in?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. We own the building in Acadia, so we're not paying rent. We own the building, and we are advertising for procurement to lease offices for satellite office. So we advertise purely because we need to be competitive, and it's a competitive bidding process. I'm not sure about the question about Public Works, but if they could assist, that would be. But we are putting it out there. Chairperson, I think the other question that was outstanding is the question regarding the matter in KZN. I'm not sure if I should respond to what we are doing about it. Well, as a regulator, you might have been aware that we issued a statement that we will investigate the matter. Indeed, we investigated independently from the police. And we were able to identify those 2 individuals in the video. And we have already interviewed them. We know who they are. We've, as I speak, issued them with the intentions to suspend their registration. But I must stress that that video, Chairperson, in itself, we cannot deal with everything in that video. Our aspect and our scope with regard to the investigation was solely on the brandishing of the firearm and all the other things that went into that. As to whether that firearm was legal or not legal, we're quite aware since our investigation that yes, the firearm itself was legal. It belonged to a security company, and it's not an AK-47. That we have established. It's not an AK-47. It's a firearm called Norinco. It's a replica of an AK-47. It's made by Chinese. You can Google it. It's a Type 56 Norinco rifle. It's semi-automatic. It looks like an AK-47, but it is not an AK-47. So that aspect, I think. But what are we doing about it? What are we doing about the companies? Obviously, when we investigated this matter, we also looked at whether there's any non-compliance with the company, right? And so far, we haven't found any. We are going to be dealing with the individuals themselves because we are concentrating on the video itself. So, but there are other matters that we've dealt with in that province, which are, I think, are separate matters from this one. So I think the emphasis from our side is, Chairperson, we are dealing with every matter that we see in the public domain, regarding security officers and security companies, and we hold them to account. And we do that independently outside SAPS. There are actions that they take. So I think with regard to the Firearms Control Act, these things that they need to be also looking into, but we look into our legislation. And for, I think from where we're standing, we're quite adequate to them, unless there are other questions with regard to that. So the regulation
for Honourable follow up?
No, Chair, you know, the reason I was triggered to ask this question is because of the statement issued by police, South African police. Remember, Chairperson, that they said they arrested those people with illegal firearms, same firearm, and it perturbed me that this thing has been there in the public domain and these people still found in possession of such things. Now, you know, such a thing, I wonder whether there's serious interaction with South African police, or South African police is, where are they in this whole equation? Because if I understand the director very well, they explained to themselves, Chairperson, some time ago about similarity or the outlook of these firearms, even with the M16, M14, that they will look like these, but they are not necessarily. But now, if the South African police as a first line of law enforcement agents will come out to the public and say, we have arrested these with unlicensed firearms, and you know, it raises a serious question that, because to me it was, are we a country that we can say that people can just go out, brandish these things, and still be found in possession? Now, here is Sira then saying that, no, these things are fully licensed in terms of ownership by the company itself. Then I think, I don't know how can we then deal with this, because it will tell me that there is something of a break in terms of communication between, or police being less informed of what is actually happening within the private security industry itself. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. What I said earlier that there are other matters, and I knew that there's two related matters. Now, the matter that Honorable Mhlongo is referring to is not the same matter as in the video. I think these are two matters. There's a video material where these guys are brandishing the firearms, and there's three bodyguards that were arrested. So that's a separate matter. With regard to that one, we've also investigated it. And we found that, first of all, the three were competent to possess those firearms. We found that two of them belonged to municipality, two of them belonged to a security company. There was adequate competency. There was adequate licensing in terms of the firearms. So even the media statement was not saying illegal firearms. It was saying unlawful possession. So there was no issue with regard to the legality of firearms. There was an issue with regard to the unlawfulness of the possession of the firearms. Hence, our focus was on the competency to possess those firearms. Now, where they would have gone wrong is when you transport a firearm, you need to have a permit in terms of the Firearms Control Act. And that's where the issue of unlawfulness came in. When they found those permits was not with them. But we are then looking into charging the municipality for failing to ensure that those permits are issued. I don't know what SAPS is doing, but from where we're sitting, we were dealing with that aspect in that fashion. I think, Chairperson, that should be adequate. There was a question.
Thank you. In terms of the question raised about the surplus, we don't really budget for a surplus. What we're striving for is to ensure that our liquidity, we are able to fund our current assets and liabilities. As indicated earlier, that when we start the financial year, our surplus is high because we have debts that are classified as assets. But right throughout the year, then you'll see our surplus netting off. We budget for break even. So if you look at our financial statement, I think that's the ideal for the type of the organization that. So the one for revenue that is missed by 3%, yes, our target increase every year. Based our explanation that we have credit notes, the legacy issue that we're dealing with, but I think this financial year would be above the targets and also above the amount of previously collected. That's the reason that we're still dealing with the credit note issue, that we cannot collect while the service providers are on credit. So that's the issue. And the issue about the unmodified audit opinion. The unmodified audit opinion is a very good opinion, very close to clean audit. The auditors assess, in terms of finances, they assess your compliance in terms of the graphs and your packaging of portfolio of evidence. In terms of the finances, we did not have material impairments. If you remember, in the last years, we had 2, 3. This year, we don't have material amendments to the financial statement. We were not assisted by the auditors to get unqualified, so we did it on our own. However, there are other issues that we still have to work on. So it's they assess it in terms of the 3-year period. So if you maintain and the growth, it's almost significant, like, I don't know, yeah. Yes, they assess it that way. And then in terms of the performance, they also look at your SMART criteria. If you look at law enforcement, it was also unmodified, which is they met all the criteria required in terms of the framework of performance management. So they assess the reliability and smartness of your KPI and how you presented your portfolio of evidence, and that's how they assess the unmodified. It's better than an unqualified audit opinion. Thank you. The grants, we have previously received a grant for research, and then after completing the research, we normally apply, it's like a supply chain, we apply for the grant and then you get approved and you are funded for the research. And we kept on applying for other grants, but we have never been funded. So in terms of the last year grant, we have not received anything, but it was solely for research. Thank you.
Chairperson, so I think the next one, I'm not sure if there's any outstanding question before we move to Kutumar.
Yeah. I think let's get the briefing on the quarterly, but just keep it brief. I mean, we already received it, and then we just put it on the record, and then we'll go to the second round, including questions that we still want to deal with in terms of the annual report. So let's get the first quarterly. As I said, the high level, and to ensure that we make progress. Thank you. Challenge. Let's see if the technology works. But let's go maybe to the hard copy. It has been distributed to members. So, thank you very much. So, Director, we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. CFO will start with the.
Okay. Thank you. It's not yet projecting. I'll just it will catch up with me. I'll go to slide number 4, the achievement against the strategic objective. We have received, managed to achieve 73% of the KPI. And then the financial performance, the total revenue was below by 3%. The same issue still haunting us, but we've intensified our collection strategy. The annual fees are below. We just built, and then we will collect. Sale of revenue is also below. The registration fees is above by 23%, and cost increase also above by 23%. And slide number 5, it's trying to show the committee that, yes, we were below. However, in the last quarter, the target, the last year quarter one target versus the current year quarter one target. So the target has increased. However, we have not yet, we didn't manage to achieve that. But you can see that we're driving ourselves towards, we increase our targets so that we can fund our operations. So under financial performance, expenditure, staff cost is 9% above the budget. This is, if you remember, members, the first in the annual report we said we had a provision issue, so we revised the policy. So in the next quarters, you will see the provision of leave and all those things that are affecting us, it will go down. We thought that we will manage it because it distorts the view of the public that we are unable to manage, but however, it's how the policy is drafted, that 20 days. So people are going to be forced to take 10 days before year end, and we provide for lesser date. And then travel and accommodation, it's 59% of our budget. We have a transformation project that took much of our traveling costs, but we will net as set it off over the 3 quarters, it would look better when we now project, because we base it on the projection based per quarter thing, and also the consultancy is also relating to the transformation project. And the issue that I was talking to about the 79%, if you look at it now, it's 79%, and then I'm confident that next month when we come, our surplus it will be lower. So every quarter it will net it off, when the quarters go like quarter two, quarter three, quarter four. And then the slide, this one, this is the slide that I'm talking to, that when you look at it, you see when we start, this is the first quarter. They are far apart. It's your surplus and your expenses. And then when we ended last financial year, you see when we ended, like we almost are breaking even there. So they must be very close. That's how, because we can't be keeping money and not servicing our operations or expanding our services. So the first, the next slide is about performance information, and then I'll just give you an overview of all the rest of the programs. We're not going to go through each and every one. That we will, remember it was 73% when we started, and then under program one, we have four KPIs, and then we have managed to achieve three. The one that we had challenge on, it's on performance management. During our review of performance, when we did moderation for performance, we've noticed that there are some challenges, like risk management should be included in the performance of executive and senior managers, where KPIs, we couldn't review people that they're not time-bound, so we had to stall a bit and ensure that the recommendation from moderation are incorporated in the new scorecards at, so that we are able to standardize. So under program one, we struggled on that one. Under program two, we have seven KPIs. We achieved five. This, we noticed that we should now start start to prioritize our, not like even, like if there are 12, we say 12 by month. So we need to look at quarter one, because quarter one is very hectic and there are so many things. So we revised our targets. We are not streamlining them. That was the shortcoming that we experienced, that there were a lot of activities that took away our capacity. That's why we are not able to do that. However, you'll see in quarter two, because we've already prepared quarter two, you'll see it's looking better. We put effort to ensure that our targets are achieved. And then in program three, we also struggled on one KPI, like three KPIs, in the one for capacity. I think one thing that we realized as an organization that planning is the key to this, because I think this audit of this financial year took a toll on us and also the activities of the organization in quarter one. We acknowledge, we're not blaming anybody, but that's something that we realize, that if we plan and, because 12 capacity building can be done in three quarters, but we put it as if we don't know, but that's something that we notice, that we must plan and take into consideration the activities of quarter one. And also in terms of the research and the surveys, we have procured a service provider, and we also, in terms of our oversight structures, our subcommittees of the council and also the PMC, which is a committee of EXCO, we're looking into all these challenges, and then we just, every quarter, we sit and scrutinize the progress and ensure that if there's additional capacity or redirecting resources, we ensure that adequate interventions is implemented. And then when the next slide is under finance and administration, and I run a risk of repeating myself because I was the one doing the highlight. So you'll pardon me if I repeat myself. The first one, the slide number 31. The revenue collected is 3%, which is what I spoke about. It's 4.7. The variance is 4.7, which is easily achievable. We strengthened. We segregated our data collection capacity. We noticed when you call the service providers, when they commit, they honor their commitment. And then also we have a minus 3%. And then also in terms of increase in revenue collected. And then we also suffered a drop in the annual fees because of that category that we introduced to ensure that we give back to the industry. And then also the financial review, the expenditure, the total expenditure to date is 56 million. And the main cost driver is staff cost at 9%. Printing is low. The printing is low, but I think it will pick up in quarter three because we have this registration campaigns where we making sure that people, now we're taking our office to other places where we don't have offices so that we can ensure compliance and also make sure that our security officers comply and renew their certificate on, and also their ID cards without expense, a lot of expense or traveling to further away from their hometown. And also the bank charges, they've increased by 34%. We're negotiating this with the bank to reduce this, but this is due to when the people are paying the expenses, then there's a bank fee that we are paying. But we're trying to talk to our bank that they are benefiting a lot from us. They should reduce the bank charges. But every year we're pushing for more, but I know at some stage they don't assist. And then this one I've spoken about, the seminars, the conferences, transformation costs, consultancy is also relating to that. And the fingerprints also increased. This relates to, you can see if the registration fee increased, also the your fingerprints will increase. So audit fees also increased, but it's increased based on the quarter one projection because we do the quarterly projection budget. But because the invoice was received, that was supposed to pay, be paid in quarter two, was paid in quarter one. So when we present quarter two, you'll see there's no increase. It will net it off. And then the next slide is the ratios. The ratios, when we look at our debtors ratio, the first year is always, or first quarter, the debt ratio looks... The conclusion, the overall performance of the organization has improved, and management with the council is confident that all planned targets and variances will be addressed throughout the year. So we're saying that, yes, we have few plus minus five targets that are not achieved, but we are confident that at the end of the financial year, we will achieve all. And then we also assuring the committee that we will receive an unqualified audit opinion, which is now, I think, it's going to be unmodified with no significant finding. And then currently the financial statement was clean. I think Mamulivas will be happy.
Yeah.
This year they were clean, the financial statement, and then our going concern will be maintained, and then we'll deal with our performance issues. Our ERP and the document management system will assist us to produce documents to assist the AG to give us a clean audit both on financial and performance information. Thank you.
Right, thank you. Members, we will go to the second round. Again, three questions to each member. CFO, I've heard what you've said about the clean audit, but the dilemma is, unless you deal with the legacy issues, that's indicated by the AG, you're not going to get a clean audit. So that should be the action plans when you come in 2 weeks' time. I want to move again to the annual report, the issue of outsourced internal audit. Now, I think in previous meetings we debated that and the pros and the cons, but it's clear from the internal control environment, is it really working? Shouldn't you have your own well-resourced internal unit? Because you've outsourced it, I mean, what is the effectiveness of an outside company? I don't see the benefits. Can you please speak to that? Then the second issue is, I think the minister also indicated that in the foreword, and I think the director referred to it, the issue of the guarantee fund. What is the progress with regard to that matter? And is there any details that you can maybe provide to the committee? Then I think Honourable Kolobana raised the issue of financial viability. We got an indication from the director that everything is going fine. But if we look at the comments of the AG, it's a mixed picture. And I think from the committee side, we need a, let's say, a much more clear indication because, for instance, the AG indicates that the collection period and the cash flow from operating activities is negative. That indicates that creditors are paid quicker than cash is collected. And also the decrease of the the surplus decreased compared to previous years, and then the entity may not be able to pay off its current liabilities from its cash and cash equivalents. So there is still those issues of uncertainty that should be clear to ensure that the AG can say, well, in terms of financial viability, you're fine. So if we can just also give an indication what are being done to address those issues in terms of those four issues in terms of financial viability raised by the AG. Honourable Carla Barnard.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Please just fill us in about this concern by the Auditor General that your business withdrawals have gone up by 692%. What is that about? Explain what that refers to and why this massive increase. Something that you have stepped up is your finalization of investigations. Now, although, you've shifted your focus somewhat from oversight onto actual security companies rather than security guards, zero locksmiths in Limpopo and Northwest, so an explanation there. But now that you're finalizing investigations faster, can we be assured that there's no compromising or truncating of the quality of the investigations? And finally, in your Program 3, communications. Now, you made various claims, and that's why we had quite a long explanation about this business with the SACETA and where things fall and who's to blame, etc. In terms of, you say you have a plan and you will be doing inspections and you've worked out how to do it, but this is not a new entity. Why did you allow the problem to develop in the first place? It seems to me you're being reactive rather than proactive. So this should already have been done so that you didn't have the problem in the eyes of the Auditor General. Why? Why did that happen? Does that speak to what the Auditor General says is that overall leadership, and I'm quoting the Auditor General, it's not my words, overall leadership is regressing, the governance is stagnating, and your oversight is under par.
Thank you. Honourable Bailey.
Thanks, Chair. I think it's just three fairly short and simple questions from my side relating to the quarter one performance report back. The first one, if I can just open the right document here. No, not that one. Yeah. Slide 18, the mention of the fact that the Western Cape didn't have a full-time prosecutor and that affected the achievement of the target. Can I just get clarity as to whether that refers to a prosecutor who is dedicated solely to four serial matters by the NPA, or in general? Because, I mean, I just wanted to understand what it means for the Western Cape not to have a full-time prosecutor, because that's kind of the core function. So just some clarity around that, please, because it's either something fairly small or something sort of like fundamentally worrying if the NPA is having issues there. And we do know that they're having major understaffing and under-resourcing challenges. Second question is from slide 25. In terms of the low number of requests for renewal being received in the first quarter and therefore the underachievements of the target there, because I see that the remedial action proposed is to obtain the list of businesses due for renewal and then to make them aware. Does FIRA currently have a system where you proactively warn systems that their registration renewal is due and coming up in the same way that the car license centers do and the way that the CFR is supposed to do for firearms? So does somebody get an email 3 months before to say, listen, you're coming up to a renewal? And if not, can we please look at implementing that? It'll make your lives and those of your clients easier. And then my final question, just again, this is, and I have to say, this is one that the Syria management have walked right into, because it says on, just got to find it now. Sorry, I've lost my bookmark. Oh, there we go. Slide 28, there's mention of the fact that there was going to be a policy initiative presented to EXCO in the second quarter. That quarter just ended in September, so can I ask, was that done? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Honourable Molobachi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I need an explanation here of how can one security guard be registered in more than one security companies. My next question is on our last interaction with you. You had a rocky relationship with SASITA. Has the working relationship improved? Thank you.
Thank you, Molobacha. And Mamula.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is 5.2% increase in female employed in the industry. It is not enough. Will you please try harder to employ more female members? My second question, in slide 16 on the first presentation, you said 8,757 non-compliance with Sera IT cards. What steps taken to those who does not comply? My third question, in slide 48, during the first presentation, you said 10 resignations. What is the cause of the resignation? Because 10 is too much. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mula. Honorable Mutlungu.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Mine is only one. I think if you go to page 10, they're indicating that there has been some delays in the finalization of the performance management tool. Now, due to the reasons that are stated there, well, understanding that, to me, that is a baseline for almost every line of performance by U.S. CIRA. What do you think will have to be done? Because anything can actually then be grounded. Even the concerns that the Chairperson was talking about, without you finalizing this particular tool, it means your performance cannot necessarily be enhanced or be elevated to the required standard. How soon can you just finalize and dispense off with this? Because to me, it's a backbone of your own organization in terms of service output. And how quick can we then get in cycles so that we can actually say that now you have a tool in place? Do you have maybe constraints in terms of policy development or whatever, if maybe there can be clarity in that area. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Logo. Honorable Markey.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's just a follow-up on the question that I asked on grants. You said you apply for grants. I thought you were self-sufficient. And if you apply, from whom do you apply? And what is the process? Why don't you just use your own money to implement? You said it was for research. And why then didn't you manage to get the grants when you applied for the previous financial year? Just to clarify myself. Thank you very much, Professor.
Thank you, Honorable Markey. Honorable Professor Musuma.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm largely covered by colleagues who passed before me. I've got, however, two questions on financial performance. It's on page 6. And the first question is, on travel and accommodation. I realize that this has gone up by 59%, and it can imply that there was a very serious under-budgeting for this item, and I would like to know why was it so. After that, when it comes to consulting, 73% of consultation fees has of the budget has gone down by 73%, which is very good, and I want to compliment Sira for this and ask the question, when are we doing away with consultancy altogether, because it seems we are en route to that destination and it's achievable. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Director, that is the second round. You're welcome.
Chairperson, the question about internal audit, I think the assessment is, the question is whether, why aren't we having our own? Chairperson, I think we, in the beginning we did an assessment, given the size of the organization, if we were to have our own capacity, what it would cost. And I think initially it would have cost quite a lot of money than to actually get an audit company, internal audit company to do it for us, because they would have then enough capacity to do it. So I think perhaps we need to do that assessment again. Maybe the CFO want to add to that.
Okay, so, thank you. In terms of the effectiveness of internal audit, as management, and I think also we reported it to the auditors, and I think the council was, we indicated our challenges. In the beginning of the financial year, we developed an internal audit strategy based on the risk and the challenges that the organization has. And then we sit with the internal audit to zoom in the challenges that we think they will, like for an example, this year we'll zoom into the debtors and all those things, that all those findings. But throughout the year, we did not get satisfaction that they were competent. And the contract was, we have appointed the new internal audit company. I don't want to use hoping, I don't have another way to use, but yeah, we're hoping, you'll pardon me, Chair, that they will deliver in terms of our challenges, because we know very well that, for an example, if we have document management system, after implementing a system, we have a strategy, the internal audit should come and review us as a second level of combined assurance. Unfortunately, the report that comes back to us, and we expect them to be rigorous and dig deep, so that, because they are in-house, but you find they just do the tip of the iceberg. And we, yeah, that's the challenge that we have, and we, indirectly, we are happy that the contract has ended and we have appointed one, and we hoping that they will deliver in terms of,
I'll come to you. Yeah, maybe you see the dilemma I have, and there's a question for the board, is the due diligence you followed with the appointment of this company. Because the problem is, if you don't got the proper internal audit function, you're not going to be able to assess with the root causes. I mean, if it's a private company, they send the lowly paid clerks or article to come and do the checklist, you're not going to address the root causes. So that's quite clear from the from the Auditor General's report. Because if you had a well-equipped and skillful internal audit, you could have averted all these findings, actually. So my question to the board is, this big outside firm, what was the due diligence and procurement processes followed, and also the appointment of the new firm? I mean, what was the due diligence processes by the board? But I think the final question is, I mean, the cost analysis. The director says that, you know, it will cost us too much. But, I mean, I would rather spend a few hundred thousand rand and get a clean audit than getting a qualified or unqualified with emphasis. So that is the value judgment you must make. So that I want the board, please, to deal with those two issues. Honourable Kodabana on the same issue.
Thank you. I just was wondering this. Now there's reference to the internal audit being done by a firm called BIC. BIG. Could be my typing. Is that the entity that contract is now expired, or is this the new one that you've taken on because it's expired? Now, this entity of yours promised this committee long ago that you would create sufficient internal capacity that you wouldn't have to be hiring outside audit firms. How far along is that process? Thank you.
Right, let's get maybe the board first to respond.
Okay. The debate we're having of whether to outsource or not to outsource is always a challenging one when it comes to internal audit. Why? Because when you have internal audit, that is internal, reporting dotted line to the MD, but reporting straight to the audit committee, because that's how it should be. Sometimes, that's what I've observed through my experience, is that the independence will sometimes get compromised, not always, if they are internal. But if they are external, yes, there are problems of the firm maybe undermining you. But if you have a good auditor and an experienced one, it's very easy because the benefit of having experienced partners looking at the work that has been done, it adds a value to the organization because you are getting that experience from a fair, established firm, of which if you are your own individual assessing the work done by those below him, you get, there are some compromises. But also, to build up for internal one, it takes a long time. And it's a good thing to do. Maybe you can start with one person who also is learning. But also the benefit of the external is that the experience that has been gained through working throughout the country.
Yeah, sorry to stop you short there. There's merits on all the points, but the dilemma is, in terms of this example that's before the committee, this company failed to produce. So your argument, we can't buy that today.
It's gone. It's water under the bridge, Chair.
No, but the question is, what did you as board as did in terms of the ensuring that the company that's appointed are sufficient and able to do it? I mean, that the procurement, I don't get the answer. Mm. And I also said in terms of the new company that's coming on board, what processes was followed? Because otherwise, no value for money.
Chair, I think one of the things that we identified was that the audit company that comes on board doesn't use the same measurement tool or the criteria as utilized by AG. And hence the standard in terms of how they audit us, they give us a perfect picture. So going forward, we made it clear when we went through the procurement process that the same measurement and the interrogation throughout the quarter so that we perfect and deal with the root cause, the new firm or the new service provider must get use the same methodology and not use what, you know, the
But it's quite clear it was then a flawed procurement process. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, did the board approve that appointment of that big company? Who appointed them? Mm-hmm. The current board.
Chairperson, can I just establish the reference to the flawed process, because the board doesn't get involved in the appointment and the adjudication of tenders. Management does, and we've got various committees, and then the board is this final sign-off. Our signing delegation is up to 1 million. So we do the entire process, we recommend to them their appointment. So, but the process is competitive out there, so this all known big and small internal audit companies, the likes of all those, some of which are in the public domain, will come and compete vigorously so for the tender. And the process then is quite equitable, and it's going to be presented. The current one, Jefferson, that process has gone through. I think what is outstanding is for the council to sign off in the coming meeting now. But the appointment, remember, we cannot then store the appointment on the basis that the council meeting is coming month, because that can still be done with by the chairperson in terms of signing off on that recommendation. The council will then ratify it in the next coming meeting, so that we do not sit with a finding, because if you don't appoint in that gap, you run the risk of the OEG coming and say, but you had this period where there was no internal audit. So that process has been done. So I just wanted to clarify the procurement process.
No, my concern is just that the AG has indicated internal control deficiencies. It's a task of a well-resourced internal audit unit to pick that up. If you don't have it, you're going to have repeat findings. And you're not going to solve the issues that's currently on the table. And I'm not giving the assurance, I'm listening what the director says, but I think when you come in 2 weeks' time, we need a further explanation of the competencies of the firm that's been appointed, its track record and so on, and the cost benefit. But on the bigger debate, long term, your own internal audit unit will be the best. I mean, but it's a debate, Let's go to the other responses.
Okay, maybe quickly. The internal audit get evaluated. The evaluation that has been done was at procurement stage. When they start doing the work, a plan will be developed and they will be evaluated based on that. And that evaluation will be publicized.
Chairperson, just to close off on the capacity issue, I just did a quick calculation. Say, for instance, we were to appoint our own internal audit. As a small organization, we might be looking at maybe getting 4 resources. An average qualified experience internal audit would cost you around 600,000 per annum. Now, if we were to get 4, that's 2.4 million that we need to budget for. And in 3 years, that would be about 7 million and more. So in 3 years, currently, I think the internal audit companies, we're raising around 1.8 million over 3 years for them to audit. So clearly, if we were to do it ourselves, it would cost us more money now as a small organization. Hence, I said in the beginning, it makes much more sense if you're a bigger organization, you employ maybe, and you've got a bigger budget.
In the long term,
I agree.
But on the versions of the members of your executive today, indicated that the company did it in the past, it was not sufficient, it wasn't according to standards, and that's indicated now that it is outcome. So it's paying less, but in the end, the product you're getting won't be sufficient going forward. That's the dilemma. Honorable Mushlongu.
I will tend to agree with the point Sirap management of the board are advancing, basing that from my previous experience in one of the municipalities I served in. I think what maybe we will have to advance, Chairperson, as a committee is the question of criteria that CIRA will have to follow, or procedure that will have to follow in order to identify a credible company that is going to deliver results in line with their requirements. Because really, if it is in-house, they will have to consider all these benefits, pension, all these it will actually then break the other bone. I'm talking from experience, I think they are quite correct there. With them, because these people then, when you enter into a contract with a person, that person must deliver according to the footprints that you have set yourself. Now, in this regard, according to the observations correctly observed by you, Chairperson, and the committee outlined by the AG, I think it will point to the question of capability of CIRA to identify or enter into contract with a credible organization that will have to actually deliver according to the desired outputs that they want. I think that is where then the issue will have Chairperson, that will have to be addressed, rather than just picking people, like what we have just seen, that no, it is a PEE, without entering into a question of serious evaluation of that particular company in terms of credibility and track record.
Right, let's go. Thank you, Honourable Klungu. Let's go through the other responses.
The progress on the guarantee fund. Chairperson, you will notice that the minister says we must proceed. Of course, the ministers knew what we did. We took the opportunity again to go and present it to him during his visit at our offices so that he gets on board, because it's quite a very significant project that we need to do. Where we are in terms of now, we're trying to assess from an actuarial point of view what the risk is. So we're still in the baby step towards establishing. But what we've done, Chairperson, is we've looked into adding it on our APP next year so that the establishment is project managed and it does happen. So it is going ahead. Chairperson, with regard to the other issues that the Chairperson alluded to in terms of the collection, the greasy in the surplus and so on, and I still want to assure Chairperson that those will be addressed in time when the fees are done. And I also want to say, Chairperson, just as a general statement, in the back of everything that we want to do, as much as we want to look like a normal organization, we are quite mindful of the fact that we are a self-funding organization. So everything that we want to add on our expenses is quite, it must be very calculated, well calculated. It also must be a priority, because we can't fund everything. As we fund, we then need to consider increasing the fees. And you know what happened in the past when we actually increased the fees much more than we needed to do to bring this organization to where we are. But otherwise, we are very mindful of all those controls that we need to bring in to ensure that the organization works optimally. The aspect around prosecutors, Chairperson, we have our own internal prosecutors. We run a quasi-judicial process where we do inquiries against service providers for violating the code of conduct. So each and every region we have an independent head office, we have our own prosecutors. You might be aware that we took some cautionary steps to suspend our current regional manager in the Western Cape whilst we were investigating. So the prosecutor was appointed to act as the regional manager. And since hence that period where we had to have an area where we didn't have a full-time, but I think that was the reference, but that person was acting, so could not prosecute those people. But we've made alternative means to actually ensure that role is actually taken care of. Chairperson,
if I may just get clarity, because I think there's just a vocab issue. So when this target refers to a prosecutor, that is a CIRA staff member internally who pursues cases against offending security companies, sort of a legal process. Okay, so it's kind of more of a litigator. Sorry to be sort of technical, but in my mind, the word I would use for that is a litigator who's
not necessarily a litigator, Jeff.
Yeah.
It's a prosecutor, because because we use them to prosecute for the contravention.
Well,
if I were to use the general, they litigate on our behalf on those quasi-judicial processes.
Okay, thanks, Chair, because I thought that was all NPA related.
Jameson, the finalization of investigation, the question was whether are we not compromising the quality. The finalization of investigation, I think these investigations refer to those that are done on our behalf by SAPS. So we have said previously that the cooperation that we have with SAPS, remember we have signed an MOU, that MOU has been distributed to the stations, so we find detectives understand more about what they need to be doing with regard to cases that we report to them. So that has enhanced it. So I don't think that the quality is compromised there. We would have to check, of course, on what the convictions are for us to determine this kind of statement. But we are happy with the finalization of the cases as we are right now. I think the question of the renewal, can I ask my colleague to address it?
With regard to the renewal, firstly, this is a special project, if you still recall. Let me just try for the benefit of those who were not present when we started in 2014. This special project was designed to address the whole identity theft and improve compliance within the industry, and we set a target of 3 years around it. And if we look at the performance in the past two financial years, when we started setting the target at the beginning of the project, we set a lower target because we didn't anticipate the industry responding to it. However, due to the awareness that took place to support the project, the industry started buying into the process, and hence I was able to indicate within the annual report that we are almost coming to the end of the project on the 1st of December this year, where almost 498,000 active registered will have gone through the renewal process. That's one. And then secondly, we are proactive when we engage the security officers. We send them SMSs. We send, for businesses, we send letters and SMSs also. We do radio campaign to sort of say we'll be coming to your area to do renewal, please prepare and just check us out on the various venues that we have identified. So we are proactive and we identify a database and set a target every time when we go to the different areas. So it's not a question of like us waiting for them to come to us. We are proactive and as far as engaging, just that now it's reaching the maturity stage. And then the other question was on the grants. I think it was Honorable Mikey who wanted clarity. The research grants that we apply for, specifically with this one, was we applied to the IRDRC, a Canadian company. And what we do when we do application is that there has to be an interest, there has to be a purpose. The grantors won't give you funds if they don't see any alignment to the project that you're presenting. So while we're able to secure funding with this one, because we indicated that we want to conduct a research within four countries in SADC, in the SADC area, South Africa, between South Africa, Botswana, Swaziland, and Namibia, yes, Namibia. It was a three-year project, special project. That's why they gave us a grant for 3 years to conduct that research, that we did partnerships between the private security and the police. How can they work together to improve the safety of the public? So we didn't even stop there. We're still busy going to your research council to see if we can get funding and other institutions to sort of align what relevance can our proposal to how can we improve the research within the private security industry. Once they see the interest and the relevancy, they'll give us grants. We're not stopping in terms of sourcing grants. And then the other question that was posed, I think it was Honorable Conor Barrett, it was around SACITA, whether are we reactive. I need to emphasize this. This target is for the first time we've been qualified on, and it has been there for the past 3 financial years. Last year, in this past financial year, what we realized, when we published the training regulations and we registered, we applied to become the professional body, that's when relationship between us and SACITA started getting to an uncomfortable position. Because in the past 2 financial years, we managed to get database and to do the whole compliance without any conflict between us. However, last year, due to the fact that SACITA felt that we are tampering to their mandate of quality assurance, hence they were reluctant to partner with us going forward. And what we did was not to wait for the end of the financial year or the audit to take place to correct this matter. We started addressing it in the 2017-18 strategic plan, which was presented around March, before audit takes place. So we're proactive when we realize and identified the challenges thereof. So in a nutshell, the measures that we have put in place, we are confident that they will help us to correct this process, because thus far we're working together with SACITA, and we are now in the process of the realignment of the qualification. So it's working for now.
Yes, the Deputy Chair also wants to add something. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, maybe let me add on that point, because the Honorable Mulebas also asked about the frosty relationship between us and SACITA. And we have engaged through the Department of Higher Education, where we had a bilateral with SACITA. And our conclusion is very simple as we move forward, that we are entities that are serving the public. And it's important that amongst ourselves we talk. And sometimes it's just perception. Even the whole issue of whether we're entering their terrain or not, it's just perceptions. And if we do not talk and understand that at the end of the day, the private security space is the one of the biggest employer currently in this country. But the levels of entrance are very low in terms of the skills. And it's important that we as a regulator, we strengthen the issues of quality, engaging the entity like SACITA that is tasked with the whole issue of skills development. So that engagements are going on. And I think one way or the other, we're finding each other with SACITA. And also, we have also engaged with SACWA in terms of those issues. But we have never had an engagement whereby we engage as people who have an interest in training. We've always engaged in terms of compliance and all those issues. The critical thing is that our goal, as we sit as a council with management, is to ensure that people who work in this industry are people who are qualified, people who look at it as a career, not just for survival.
Gubani, Honorable Malabachi, and then Honorable Bailey.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Meaning there is an improvement. Thank you.
Yes, Chair, just a very short comment, because I would like to echo and place emphasis on what's the Deputy Chairperson just said just now. You know, we tend to talk a lot in the committee about the professionalization of the police, and rightly so. But I'm just realizing now that we never really talk about the professionalization of the private security industry. And I think that that's equally important given the big role that it plays. And the Chair will remember, and the members who were there, the big highlights that came out of the study trip which just came from last week was around strengthening professionalization through training, through setting standards and entry requirements. So I just want to give recognition of that conception and the fact that there's work being done in that direction. I think it's very important. Especially given a handful of experiences I've had with guards in various areas who just don't know what they're doing. But yeah.
Thank you very much. Other responses?
Okay. In terms of the question raised in terms of the management letter, in terms of financial viability. Yes, we agree that the creditor's payment period is 30 days. It's also prescribed by the PFMA. We should comply and pay our people within 30 days. The trade debtors are the highest contributor to this. So once we sort out that issue, you'll see it will be turned around, because the creditor's payment we have control of. Then we must start intensifying the controls on collecting or prescribing them in time. So there are five steps that we should follow to ensure that the collection is intensified. And another thing that adds up to our liabilities is the provisions. And as previously mentioned, that we will ensure that we manage the provisions so that our liabilities are controlled, then there will be improvements. And then on the issue of consultancy, the prescript from National Treasury says you must assess if you have skills before you consult. So before we procure a consultant, we assess whether you have such requisite skills in the organization, and then we then start procurement. So that process is managed properly. We only outsource or consult on matters that are really not within our competency level. And then the traveling and accommodation, the budget was straight lined, so it will net off throughout the year. So as and when we progress throughout the year, you see that the 59% will be minimized. And there's also a process of, we have a budget committee on quarterly basis where we do our adjustment budget and our environment, where we look at how can we reprioritize and fund the critical areas. So we have that, those processes inside the organization.
Thank you.
There was also a question about how can a guard be employed by three different companies.
Mm-hmm.
Chairperson, there is a challenge of identity fraud in this industry, where guards would then find their details being stolen and a person would go and look for work elsewhere. Under normal circumstances, we should be able to identify the discrepancy on our database. We do most of the time, because then there will be clashes. You can't declare one person over and over in different companies, so we are able to do so. But there's many cases as well that we are investigating with regard to that. But there is quite a very disturbing trend that we picked up lately, where people come and apply for renewal of their registration. We give them certificates, and then they come back after a month or two. We have discovered that some of these people then get the certificates and go and sell them to people who would otherwise not be eligible to enter the industry. For instance, if I have a criminal record and I can't enter the industry, but I desperately need to work in the industry, I then get a security officer who's not keen to go and work, but is registered with CIVA. And he sells a certificate to me. And I go and look for work, and I get work. Because if I were to go directly, I would be fingerprinted and I would be rejected. So that's a trend. But we are investigating all those cases that we are reported. So it is possible, but there are means that we are looking at in future to try to minimize that kind of identity fraud from taking place. The non-compliance, I just want to understand what was the question.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. With regards to that particular question, it's in respect of slide 16. That deals with non-compliance with CIRA ID cards. That what are we doing as CIRA, as and when there's that particular finding. What we are doing, we charge them with improper conduct, or a violation of the code of conduct from the law enforcement side. Thanks very much.
Is that all the responses?
I think one was from Honorable Mula, was just a comment on we need to do more in as far as female employed within the industry. With that, we are creating awareness, but also educating employers to create favorable and working environment, because what we picked up in the interim was that some of the working environments are not conducive for female employees to enter the industry. So part of our awareness and education campaign is to teach the security service providers to accommodate the diverse market or segment of the industry, including disabled people.
I think last question from Honorable Mhlongo that was not asked. Chairperson, what we had said about the deployment of the performance tool, we had said that we actually delayed it because we needed to implement the recommendations of a moderation committee. What then happens is every time when we assess performance, we then come across challenges that would have been experienced during the performance period. And then the moderation committee will make recommendations. So those recommendations were to be included in the new scorecard, hence the delay. So as we speak, those new scorecards were deployed, those performance tools, were deployed.
Yes, one, I think this is the last one, about the 10 resignations. The 10 resignations were voluntary resignation, and as previously mentioned, I think also on page 96, we have reports from Benedict Kennedy reports under Forbes. We were listed as best employer in the country, so we are easily targeted, and our employees are regarded as the best. Thank you.
Yes, there's two follow-ups, Honourable Bailey, then Honourable Malabatsi.
Yeah, Chair, I'm sorry if I missed the response, but my third question has been just to ask if that policy was proposed to EXCO.
Those two specific policies were referred back to the stakeholder committee, and then they were referred back to EXCO. So we processed them, and they are going back again. And the reason for that referral back was too fast to refine them. So it's got nothing to do with the acceptance. It was just to refine them. So, yeah, they will be finally approved, I think, in quarter three.
Honourable Malabatsi.
Did I hear you well in your explanation about the 10 resignations that the main reason was greener pastures?
Thank you very much. Honourable members, any further questions? I think we come to the close then of today's meeting. I want to thank the board as well as the director and his team for the presentation. There's indeed in certain areas good progress, while in other areas there needs to be further work done. That's why in 2 weeks' time we need an action plan, more detailed, and also from the audit committee. I think there's also an opportunity for CIRA. I think currently in the cluster that we oversee, it's the civilian secretariat and CIRA is very close to each other in terms of the number one position in terms of corporate governance as well as the AG's outcome. So I think the challenge would be for CIRA to be number one next year, and it's achievable. I think some of the issues are not insurmountable. So I think the board must crack the whip, ensure that they do the necessary due diligence and governance framework, and the director must oversee that those matters are implemented. So it's quite important going forward. So we will then meet in 2 weeks' time on the action plans, and we will also want to also highlight the fact that there should be close interaction with the AG. from the beginning, from the management later, the quarterly reports, the meetings of the audit committees and follow-ups. That's the only way you're going to achieve a clean audit. So we will follow your progress going forward. Thank you very much, members. We will meet then 9 o'clock on Tuesday for the crime stats of the previous financial year. Currently it's room 3, 90 Plain Street, but we will try and get a bigger stadium for that meeting. Maybe Cape Town Stadium. But thank you very much. Meeting is good.
Yeah, I was so good. First,